The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Wednesday, everyone, and we have good news to open the show with, and you know me. I'm always up for some good news. I even have something special, I think. I do. Something special to bring in the good news with. So let's do it. Here we go.
Tell me something good.
Good news blowing in your window.
Good
news is knocking on your door.
Not to build it up or anything, but Ruth Bader Ginsburg is out of the hospital. Yes! Yes! And I'll tell you, that's enough good news for me for the day, because I was worried, as I know were you. We need to keep her safe. Someone said, wrap her in bubble wrap, just keep her safe for the next 6 months. Keep her safe. So, yes, we have Ruth Bader Ginsburg is out, and I guess feeling well, and that's a good thing. Lots of news to get to today, and we've got a great interview coming up. Look, we should all be a bit freaked out by the COVID. I saw a video. I should have pulled it to play it here. It was two guys in Huntington Beach, California. And I told you yesterday about Orange County, California. We used to jokingly talk about it being behind the orange curtain. And it's even before we knew about the orange menace who would soon take up residence at the Oval Office. But, you got Los Angeles and you got San Diego. And San Diego is not the most liberal bastion of California either. But compared to Orange County, I guess it is. Because Los Angeles and San Diego school departments announced at the beginning of the week that they will not be opening their schools come April 18th for in-person classes. Because they know there's a pandemic happening and it's worse than it's been here thus far. But Orange County, they said, nah, schools are open, no social distancing, no masks required. But at this video that I saw from Huntington Beach had these two guys out with a whole bunch of masks that they decided they're going to hand them out to people walking by who obviously needed masks because they weren't wearing them. And the vitriol these two young men were met with was astounding. I mean, it shouldn't surprise me, but it was just, it's depressing nonetheless. Anyway, I didn't pull that video, so I don't have it for you. Maybe tomorrow. All right, maybe tomorrow. A quick little bit of a fallout from yesterday. I told you I was afraid I was going to get copyright violated for playing that Stephen Colbert bit about the Lincoln Project. And sure enough, they blocked the video on YouTube and Facebook. I wound up editing it out of the YouTube video so that the video could live on. And then I just posted the video. I embedded it in the blog at NicoleSandler.com, followed by 7-14-20, which was yesterday's date. That's how I post the shows each day. So if you ever miss one, you want to go to my blog to hear a show, just go by the date. And it's easy. Easy peasy. So instead of any of that for the funny today, we have a new one from Lauren Mayer. And Lauren, she's been quite prolific lately. And she and her husband have even been doing some live streams on weekends, like live concerts. Because why not? Because we can, right? But she turned this one around rather quickly because we heard the news story just yesterday when Laffy was here about Ivanka. Ivanka with her new Be Best initiative. It's not the Be Best. It's Try Something New, right? You heard about it. If you're out of work and you can't find a job, well, then try something new. And that's when I said, I've only done radio for 40 years. I've only worked in radio since 1979, since college. So, you know, it's not like anyone's hankering to hire a 60-year-old woman with no experience other than in radio. So, hey, because Ivanka says, try something new, I'm going to be a doctor. I mean, I have as much medical prowess as her father, actually more, because I got a bigger brain. You know, I know better than to prescribe drugs before they've been cleared for, you know, human consumption. So that's what I'll try. I'll try being a doctor. Anyway, Lauren Mayer at Lauren's Comedy on the YouTubes has a song for us in this Try Something New vein. So take it away, Lauren Mayer. Ivanka tells me something new. Why isn't it playing?
Woke up
here we go.
This morning, checked my feed. The White House has a new campaign indeed. Solving unemployment, they say, is easy to do. Oh, yeah. Ivanka tells me I should find something new. With multiple crises, we've been hit. Made worse because her dad is an idiot. They think they'll distract us by denying what's true.
Distracting us by denying what's true.
Ivanka tells me I should find something new.
Ivanka tells me I should find something new.
Is she doing real work? No, but she introduced a fancy-looking video. Could she be more tone-deaf yet?
She's like a modern Marie Antoinette.
She's like a modern Marie Antoinette.
She's the kind of girl who's entitled and fake.
Basically, she's saying, let him eat cake. They launched on Bastille Day because they don't have a clue.
Launched on Bastille Day because they don't have a clue.
Ivanka tells me I should find something new.
Ivanka tells me I should find something new.
She's totally incompetent, but Dad got her a job so she can government. So in November, it'll be nice when Ivanka has to take her own advice. Let's make her take her own advice. If we come together and show some pluck, we'll make her dad just a one-term schmuck.
Aww.
It should be a landslide turning everything blue.
A landslide turning everything blue.
We'll tell all the Trumps, go find something
tell
new.
Tell Ivanka she can find something
Don't
new.
Worry, Ivanka, we'll find something new.
Tell Ivanka she can find something
So vote
new.
Blue, oh yeah, let's vote.
Tell Ivanka she can find
let's
something
Let's vote blue, oh yeah, let's vote blue.
Ooh, 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 Lauren Mayer, everybody. Good stuff. And she whipped that one out. And we love it like that. Yeah. All right. We'll take a quick time out. We got a busy show for you today. We have our guest is an expert on pandemics, on diseases that have blanketed the globe. She's got the cover story in the new issue of The Nation magazine. And actually, wait, let me pull this up here because it's got the print version, you know, it's the cover story, the print version that'll be out, I guess, next week. It's already there online. And the print version, the headline, the cover is, hold on, I'm going to scroll and find it. I lost it here. The print version, it says it's called How to Define a Plague. Okay. On the online version that you can get right now at thenation.com, it's titled, It's Time to Tell a New Story About Coronavirus. Our Lives Depend on It. And they do. So we'll get into that with Sonia Shaw. And this is a woman, she's smart. She's got like 5 books out now, a couple of them having to do with not necessarily the pandemic, but one was about the spread of cholera back in the 1800s. So, so we will talk to her. Let's take a quick time out. We'll come back on the other side with the news because, you know, there's a lot of news out there. So don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler. It's the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. All right. Hopefully Progressive Voices is in an ad right now, and we will listen to Jim Hightower. I think. Maybe not. Oh,
a coronavirus
there we go.
Mask. Because he realizes that, in a mask, we'd all recognize him as the robber who has been moving furtively behind the scenes of the pandemic to rig the rules against workaday folks to further enrich corporate elites. With media attention riveted on COVID-19 body counts, Trump and company have felt free to monkey wrench labor laws, dynamite environmental regulations, manipulate the tax code, and generally burglarize our people's commitment to the common good. They're like Robin Hood and his merry band, only in reverse, stealing from the many to give more to the rich few. They've even quietly filched the bulk of the government's multi-trillion dollar pandemic recovery program, thus dramatically increasing wealth inequality. While you might have received a one-time $1,200 relief check from Washington, major corporations have actually been given the keys to the Federal Reserve's money-printing machine, funneling a long-term giveaway of hundreds of billions of dollars to them. Also, corporate interests are pocketing untold amounts from several little-reported grant programs and tax breaks discreetly created just for them. For example, mysteriously tucked into Trump's first rescue package was a $135 billion tax boondoggle specifically designed for such hucksters as giant real estate developers. Like whom? Well, Trump himself and son-in-law Jared Kushner appear to qualify. Just lucky, I guess. Adding to the peculiarity, this handout had nothing to do with helping America recover economically from the pandemic. Rather, it provides retroactive tax breaks on deals developers cut long before this year's COVID crash. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's Trump and Company's version of the old political adage, never let a big crisis go to waste.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Oh, we love Jim Hightower. All right. Well, Progressive Voices Network is still in commercials. I thought I'd come in here and play a couple of other things that I found. The Florida Democratic Party, of which, you know, I'm not very impressed, actually put out a new ad because they, like we, are pissed off about the idiot in Tallahassee. That would be our governor, Ron DeSantis. Sorry. And so they put out a new ad about Ron DeSantis. So let me share it with you now. Here we go. Governor Ron DeSantis failed Florida.
Does not make it go away. That's why states like Florida are in such dire straits. Listen to its governor, DeSantis, boasting last month.
You got a lot of people in your profession who waxed poetically for weeks and weeks about how Florida was going to be just like New York. Wait 2 weeks. Florida's going to be next. Just like Italy. Wait 2 weeks. Well, hell, we're 8 weeks away from that, and it hasn't happened.
He made Trump happy, Governor DeSantis did, and now more Floridians than they can count accurately appear to be sick.
We're in a way better position today.
Yet 43 hospitals in Florida report their ICU beds are at capacity. Dozens more are closed.
We're back to even before square one, honestly, because of the massive surge in cases.
And that curve the governor mentioned, it's looking more like a steep cliff.
Volunteer, vote them out, is what it says on the screen. It probably would have been better if I had read along the
You're listening to the Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network and NicoleSandler.com.
All right. Best laid plans and all that stuff. I'll tell you what. Let's just get to the news, shall we? And for that, we do this.
I read the news today.
Oh, boy. All right. I know. Wow, he's quiet today.
No, we'll do it live.
No, of course, he's here.
Do it live.
Never mind.
I'll write it and we'll do it live.
Okay, you're done?
Fucking thing
sucks. Not yet. All right, thank you, Bill O'Reilly. For some reason, he likes to stick his head in every day and tell me to do it live. Well, at least I'm still alive because this COVID stuff is out of control. The United States set another single-day record for coronavirus cases yesterday. 67,000. That's a lot. And infection rates are accelerating, not only here, but around the world. I feel like a broken record. I think I said all of this yesterday, didn't I? But I'm not reading yesterday's news. This is today's. Go figure. All right. So the borders between the U.S. and Mexico and U.S. and Canada will now remain closed to non-essential travel through at least late August. I know a lot of people really not happy about that. I've got a friend who they just bought a house in Canada and they can't get up there. Yeah. Thank you, Donald. Let's see. Speaker Nancy Pelosi said she's also willing to delay August congressional recess to get another relief bill in the can. That's mighty, mighty generous of her, I think. I don't know why they have to take August off every year. I understand. Look, it's an election year and they all need to go home and, campaign. But then again, this year, they're not doing a whole bunch of campaigning because COVID. Anyway, so all this is going on. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is pulling more underhanded crap. Yesterday, they quietly changed the rules about how hospitals are required to send their case information to the government. They had always sent it to the Centers for Disease Control. Well, Trump has a thing about the CDC, and he's been dissing them all along, as he has, you know, Fauci and the other experts. And now the White House has ordered states, governors, hospital administrators to bypass the Centers for Disease Control in favor of the Department of Health and Human Services. Beginning tomorrow, Wednesday, tomorrow, the numbers of available beds in intensive care units, the numbers of patients on ventilators, stockpiles of personal protective equipment, and other data points will be collected daily by a department more closely aligned with the White House, is how they said it. Oh, my God. And this is a move that has alarmed public health experts who fear the data will be distorted for political gain. You think? Distorted? You know that Trump is in opposite world, right? Because he talks about, you know, they're politicizing everything. No, he's politicizing everything. Everything he says, it's that old, you know, he is a child. He acts like he's about 8 years old. And it's the old thing that we used to say, you know, I'm rubber, you're glue, everything you say bounces off me and sticks to you. That's how he goes through life. I gotta read the book. I gotta read Mary Trump's book. I really do. Anyway, Florida, you know, where I sit, is the new epicenter of the outbreak. Yesterday, the state of Florida reported that it had 132 coronavirus deaths in the previous 24 hours, marking a single day record for the state. The previous high of 120 deaths in one day was just last Thursday. Hospitalizations have reached record levels. Public officials in Miami-Dade County have said Miami is the new epicenter of the virus. The state's numbers continue to surge. It's really frightening, but we're not alone. Now we're hearing North Carolina, Alabama, Nevada, and Utah also reported record numbers of fatalities yesterday as the nationwide death toll moved past 136,000. And the director of the Centers for Disease Control, Robert Redfield, yesterday said if everyone in the United States wore face masks, the coronavirus could be under control within 1 to 2 months. Maybe that's why Trump is like leapfrogging over the CDC and just cutting them out of the loop, because he's a moron. He's just a moron. Joe Biden was out and about yesterday. He was on television. I was surprised to see they actually carried his whole speech, in which he unveiled a proposal, a $2 trillion plan, kind of like Infrastructure Week, except he might actually do it. The plan is to rebuild cities and towns across the country by investing in clean energy. What a concept. His proposal would put the country back on track to cut its carbon footprint in half by 2035. Although, if you heard the show last, I think it was last Friday, we had on an environmentalist, Margaret Klein Salomon, and I only recall her name because her book is sitting right over there. And she said, we need to get to zero emissions now. But I guess this is better than nothing, and certainly better than what Trump is doing. Anyway, this proposal would put the country on track to cut its carbon footprint in half by 2035. It was released, the plan, a week after a task force jointly created by Biden and Bernie Sanders. Look at that. Strange bedfellows. Now, Donald Trump yesterday spoke in the Rose Garden at an event that was promoted as a news conference. But we know what it was. Thankfully, I was on the air at the time, so I didn't see it. Although he was still going when the show was over, I caught the last maybe 10 minutes as I was making dinner. And my God, the man is truly demented. So, you know, it was promoted as a news conference, and it turned into one of his campaign rally rambles in which he made no sense at all, in which he spent, as far as I could tell, the better part of an hour bad-mouthing Joe Biden and his family. You just don't do that from the Rose Garden. And this man has torn away all the norms that we've come to expect. You expect the president of the United States to have a little bit of class, a little couth. I know couth is not a word, but it's the opposite of uncouth, so I use it as a word. But it was just horrific. I don't know why those journalists didn't just get up and walk out. Serious. Well, I do, because then they'd lose access. But this is fucked up. So in what analysts described as a replacement for a postponed New Hampshire campaign rally that had been scheduled for last Saturday, but was canceled because, oh, there was a storm coming. It was canceled because no one was going to show up. Trump started messing around and talking about Joe Biden's $2 trillion climate plan that Biden announced in his televised speech earlier in the day. And Trump said it was part of a hard left crusade against American energy. Yeah. And then he went on to criticize Biden's positions on the military, on immigration, on China, causing commentators on all the networks basically to chime in on what they saw and in some cases cut away, like, oh, CNN. Come on, CNN. Why are we not playing here? Uh-oh. All right. I see it and I'm not. Why do I have no audio coming from there? That's not good. Wow, I guess I can't play audio. Would this play? No audio is playing from there. That's weird, and I don't know why. All right, I guess I'm not playing that audio for you. Well, shit, man. I suppose, do I still have it up here? Let's see. We shall see if we can do this. My news may be cut really, really short. Which clip was that? It was 14. CNN cut. So here is CNN cutting away from this debacle that called itself a news conference. Maybe. Maybe not. Here we go.
President, he's going to do all the things that he didn't do. He never did anything except make very bad decisions, especially on foreign policy. So Joe Biden and President Obama freely allowed China to pillage our factories.
Shut up.
Plunder our communities and steal our most precious secrets.
All right, we're going to continue to monitor the President of the United States.
That's what I wanted to play for you.
He's deteriorating into a campaign-type speech going after the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, Joe Biden. We're going to continue to monitor what the president's been saying. Once he gets to the questions and answers, assuming he takes reporters' questions, we'll get back to that speech.
Yeah, so that was CNN, where then Jim Acosta said, and I quote, Trump soiled the White House Rose Garden with that performance. Presidents do not use the Rose Garden in that kind of naked political fashion. That was not a press conference, as the White House described it. It was a campaign rally disguised as a press conference. It was a bait and switch. At the New York Times, Peter Baker wrote, even for a president who rarely sticks to the script and wanders from thought to thought, it was one of the most rambling performances of his presidency. Okay. Yeah. And then even on the Fox, I got to just play this real quickly. This is what Bret Baier said on Fox so-called news.
52 minutes before taking a question, presidents in the past, by tradition, have stayed away from overt campaign rhetoric from the Rose Garden or the White House, but it is the president's discretion. It is worth noting, however, to be fair, that had President Obama made this kind of speech from the Rose Garden, Republicans on Capitol Hill would likely have been up in arms. But this comes 112 days, 16 weeks to the day, before Election Day, the November election. Former Vice President Joe Biden came out with part two of his economic plan today as President Trump tried to paint Biden incapable of matching the president's economic success.
All right. Well, that's enough. I mean, I wanted you to hear the part where he said, if Obama had done this, the Republicans would be up in arms, and they would. And it's nice that at least that somebody over at Fox went there and admitted what's going on. I think there are cracks starting to form. I guess that's what happens when your approval rating for handling the biggest crisis of our lifetimes is at a 33. And that's where Trump's approval rating stands right now. Yeah. Yesterday was an election day, by the way. It was it was primary day in Alabama and Maine, and runoffs were held in Texas. Now, in Alabama, boy, I screwed up yesterday. I could have sworn I heard somewhere that Trump had endorsed, what's his name, Roy Moore. Maybe I was having flashbacks or something. And honestly, I don't pay that much attention when Roy Moore's name comes up, so I thought he was running again. But I did know that Trump endorsed this former Auburn football coach, Tommy Tuberville, against Jeff Sessions. Now, Jeff Sessions was the senator from Alabama for over 20 years, and he was very popular before he joined the administration. Well, this Tommy Tuberville guy, who never held any elected office before in his life, beat Sessions in this primary yesterday, 60.7% to 39.3%. Wow. Tuberville now faces Senator Doug Jones, who won the special election for that seat to replace Sessions, and is considered the most vulnerable Senate Democrat facing re-election in November. I know we've got at least one regular Alabama listener usually in the chat room. I don't know if he's here right now. But yeah, that was a primary runoff. Yes, that was the runoff. There was also the runoff in Texas, where the two progressives we wanted to win won. Candace Valenzuela and Mike Siegel both beat their centrist opponents for the chance to flip Republican suburban districts blue. In the Travis County District Attorney race, Jose Garza, an immigrants' right activist and former public defender backed by the Democratic Socialists of America, ousted the incumbent, a woman named Margaret Moore. You go, Texas. Yeah. And we now have a Democratic candidate to go up against John Cornyn in the general, MJ Hegar, who I don't know anything about. So that all happened. And in Maine, we have Sarah Gideon, who had a huge fundraising haul, is officially the Democrat going up against Susan Collins. We're less than 100 days away from November 3rd. And I will remind you again that November 4th is my birthday. So it's up to all of you to go out and vote and make it a good one for me. All right. One last thing. We know Ghislaine Maxwell pleaded not guilty yesterday to helping her boyfriend, accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein recruit and abuse girls as young as 14. The judge denied her bail, even though she was offered $5 million. And the judge said no, the risks are simply too great. So her trial is set for July 12th. 2021. Keep her alive, please. Those victims all deserve a day in court. All right. Let's take another time out and we will come back on the other side. I think with our guest, Sonia, what's her last name? Shaw, who's got the cover story in the current edition of The Nation magazine, on dealing with pandemics, something that we all know all too well these days. Stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler on the Progressive Voices Network and NicoleSandler.com. All right, so I'm going to play something for you. I hope this doesn't get me copyright violated while PV is in commercials. And I was so disgusted by Trump's... Oh, it didn't fire the commercials, did it? Oh, I see why. Ah, I got it. Hold on. It didn't fire the commercials because I fired the wrong thing. So let me do this. Now did it fire commercials? Yes. Okay. So while they're in commercials, I'm going to play for you a little medley I put together yesterday. I know you hate hearing Trump's voice, but this I'm hoping you'll enjoy because I got a little creative today. So while I get our shot set up with our guest, enjoy a salute of sorts, I guess, to Trump's idiocy, because stupid is he. Whoops. Okay.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Think of this. If we didn't do testing, instead of testing over 40 million people, if we did half the testing, we'd have half the cases. If we did another, you cut that in half, we'd have yet again half of that.
I'm an extremely stable genius.
Nobody knows this stuff better than me.
Nobody knows more about taxes than I do and income than I do.
Nobody knows more about construction than I do.
Nobody knows more about campaign finance than I do.
I know more about drones than anybody.
Nobody knows much more about technology, this type of technology, certainly, than I do.
Nobody knows more about technology than me.
Nobody in the history of this country has ever known so much about infrastructure as Donald Trump.
I know the H-1B. I know the H-2B. Nobody knows it better than me.
I know more about ISIS than the generals do, believe me.
I understand things. I comprehend very well, okay? Better than, I think, almost anybody.
And by the way, who knew the other side of the picture better than me? I knew it.
Nobody knows more about environmental impact statements than me.
I understand the power of Facebook. Maybe better than almost anybody.
I know more about renewables than any human being on Earth.
Nobody knows more about polls than me.
I know more about courts than any human being on Earth.
I know more about steelworkers than anybody that's ever run for office.
I know more about golf than Obama knows.
Nobody knows more about banks than I do.
Nobody knows more about trade than me.
Well, obviously, he doesn't know about nuclear weapons. I know more about nuclear weapons than he'll ever know.
I understand the tax laws better than almost anyone.
Who knows more about lawsuits than I do? I'm the king.
I know more about offense and defense than they will ever understand.
And nobody even understands it but me. It's called devaluation.
I understand money better than anybody.
I understand the system better than anybody.
Nobody knows more about debt than I do.
Nobody knows the game better than me.
I know more about contributions than anybody.
And who knows more about the word apprentice than Donald Trump?
I understand politicians better than anybody.
Nobody knows politicians better than me.
Who knows the other side better than me?
Who knows the other side better than me?
I think I know more about the other side than almost anybody.
And I understand the other side. Perhaps I understand it better than anybody else.
I was the fair-haired boy. Nobody knows more about it than me.
I know more than these politicians. These guys don't know anything.
I know a lot. I know more than I'm ever going to tell you.
Nobody wants to know him. They can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer but the fool on the hill.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network and NicoleSandler.com.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. If it insulted your ears, I need a little time here to get our next guest ready to go. And she is with us, and I'm really excited. Sonia Shaw is an author. She is, she's got the cover story on the current edition of The Nation magazine. Sonia, can you hear me okay?
I can.
Awesome.
Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear. Thank you so much for being here today. And thank you for writing this. Now, you've written quite a bit about pandemics, about diseases. In fact, I spoke with somebody a few weeks ago who wrote a piece about a book about the Spanish flu of 1918. 17, if you're Donald Trump, but 1918 to the rest of us. But you wrote a book about a cholera spread around the world that happened in the summer of 1832. Was that the first known pandemic that we know of, or it goes way back with the plague and all that, right? We've had a number of them throughout the years.
Over the course of human history. But what I did in my last book, Pandemic, which you're referring to, which came out in 2016, is I was trying to track how microbes turn into pandemic-causing pathogens. And there's only been a few pathogens that have been able to do it. Among those, cholera is one of the most successful. It's caused more than, not just one or two pandemics, but actually seven. Wow. Pandemics. And the latest one is boiling right now off the coast of Florida, just a few hundred miles in Haiti.
Oh, no.
So cholera is a really good example of how pandemics unfold. And so that was sort of the case study I took as a historical example. And then I compared those to the new pathogens that are emerging today to see how they are faring in comparison to how cholera did it.
Now, back in 1832, I love the cover image. In fact, I'll put it up on the screen for those watching on YouTube or Facebook. This picture I've seen before. I never knew really what it was, but I guess this is how doctors or medicine people dressed back in the 1800s, thinking that, well, maybe you can explain it to me, that something called miasmas spread cholera and disease through clouds of smelly gas called miasmas, and that wearing those kind of get-ups would somehow keep the disease away. Can you explain that, what they were thinking back then?
Well, those get-ups were, I think, more specifically for the plague, and what they would do in those beaks is they would put like flowers or dried flowers, something that smelled good. It was to protect themselves from the odors. But you're right. So since Hippocrates, the idea about contagious diseases was that they spread because of these smelly gases that you inhaled, which were called miasmas. And miasmas were more common where there is organic rotting material, like around wetlands or swamps. So those areas were always considered kind of unhealthy and dangerous. And that lasted for 2,000 years. So it actually probably helped people avoid places like wetlands and swamps where there was a lot of mosquitoes. So maybe it would help you avoid malaria, for example, which was a very common disease across North America and Europe and elsewhere, not very long ago, just a century ago or so. But then the problem is that that's how doctors were thinking about contagious diseases. And then they have this new disease, cholera. When we think of cholera as sort of a, you know, poor person's disease and a very old thing today. But when it first emerged in 1832, in 1817, when it first came out, and then it started causing pandemic in 1832, nobody had ever seen anything like it before. And it hit the most sort of advanced societies of that time, you know, New York, London, Paris, Hamburg, New Orleans. These cities were struck with repeated outbreaks of cholera that were incredibly deadly and disruptive and lasted for nearly a century before they could control them.
Right. Well, I'm reading your piece at The Nation, which, by the way, is depending on where you read it. If you read it in the print version, it has one headline, which is How to Define a Plague. And if you read it online at thenation.com, it's time to tell a new story about coronavirus. Our lives depend on it. But it blew my mind reading your piece because you wrote, they believe contagions like cholera spread through clouds of smelly gas called miasmas. To protect themselves from these deadly gases, you wrote, people burned barrels of tar and strung up large pieces of meat on poles, which they hoped would soak up the cholera vapors. In London, they attempted to rid their homes of stinking miasmas by dumping human waste into the river, which also served as the city's drinking supply. That's how cholera spreads, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's very ironic because they thought that cholera is something you inhaled. Yeah. So it was the smelly, you know, the bad smells essentially is what would give you cholera. So they were very concerned about their cesspools and privies, which were all kind of in the house and very stinky. But what they were concerned about wasn't the contents of the cesspools and privies. It was just the odor. So they decided, well, let's put in flush toilets and we'll flush all this stuff away. And since that got rid of the smell, they didn't really care about where the contents went, which all went into the River Thames, which was, of course, their drinking water supply.
Oh,
and so after every cholera outbreak in the city of London, people installed more flush toilets to flush more of their human waste into the river, and made cholera most likely much, much worse.
Right. So it just shows, how little they knew back then. And before then, as, other diseases ravaged the planet. And I guess the good news, the good thing that I can take away from it is the planet survived and people survived, even though millions lost their lives. I mean, this cholera outbreak lasted, you say, what, for like a century?
Nearly 80 years before we were able to tame them. And that was basically through social reforms. You know, it's not that we came up with some magic drug or potion. We basically put into place very hard-won social reforms that ended up changing the way we live in ways that made it impossible for cholera to spread among us.
It's wild when you look at the correlations, because frankly, it looks like that's the only thing that's going to help us is if we change our behaviors. I mean, look, we quarantined for a month, 6 weeks. Most people, I'm still at home, as is pretty much everybody I know. I'm a little older. And, you know, as you get older, you have underlying medical conditions. I 4 years ago had lung cancer, so I'm basically down a lung. COVID to me is probably deadly, so I don't leave the house. When I do, I wear a mask. I also got a face shield. We believe in being responsible, but I just watched this video of these people out on Huntington Beach. Kids were trying to give away free masks, and they were being cursed at and told it's a hoax. It's a lie. I'm still blown away that there are deniers like this, but I guess that comes with the territory, especially when you have someone in the White House singing that same song.
That's the biggest factor. But B, you know, we're just at the beginning of this thing. So maybe 1% of the population has been exposed to coronavirus that we know of. Scientists say it's probably 10 times bigger than that. So that's 10% of the population has been exposed. We're not going to be done with this until we're 40 to 70% exposed, right? So it's taken us 5 or 6 months to get to this first 10%. At the rate we're going, we're going to keep going at that rate. It's still going to take us 2 years to get to 40 to 70% if we don't get a vaccine before then. And, you know, that's a whole separate issue.
It is a separate issue. And, you know, my daughter was asking me about that last night. I feel terrible. I've got a daughter who turned 21 in quarantine. No 21-year-old should be stuck at home with her parents for months on end. But she's also freaked out by this. And I'd rather her be safe than sorry. We've heard too many horror stories. But she asked about, she works in personal services. She does actually body piercing. And she said, do you think when I can go back to work that it would be okay for me to say that unless you're vaccinated, I won't work on you? And my answer was, for it to get to that level, we're years away from that, aren't we?
I think so. I mean, I think the political pressure right now to come up with some vaccine of any kind at all is so huge because, of course, the president has hung his whole reelection chances on that. And he's throwing money, taxpayer money, left and right to unproven companies that are using the usual profit-driven model to develop these products. And we have a pretty good documented history of what happens when biomedical products are created in a rush and for profit reasons, right? So it doesn't exactly inspire confidence. I think most likely we will get some vaccine. It's just probably won't be as effective as many of us would like. You know, the best flu shots are often only 30% effective, 40% effective. Right. The vaccines that are 90 plus effective, like the measles vaccine, for example, smallpox vaccination, those are actually the exception to the rule. Most vaccines are not going to be as effective as all that. And so if it's not as effective, then you need a lot of people either have to take it or you have to have other interventions. So it still comes back down to that central issue, which is that we need to learn how to cooperate with each other and look out for each other. You know, it's really going to be about collective cooperative action. That's the real magic bullet cure here.
Right. And did the news that we heard yesterday that the immunity that comes from the antibodies for people who already had the disease doesn't seem to last very long? Does this make you a little more wary about the possibility of a more effective vaccine?
I think it's quite possible that we might need to have coronavirus vaccine sort of churned out every year than we do flu shots. Yeah. You know, it could be that we need that. You know, so we don't know enough about immunity. But this goes back to my central critique in the article that I wrote, which is that we're putting so, you know, there's a lot of scientific questions to answer about this thing. But we are focusing so much of our social capital, our resources, our money, our taxpayer dollars into the hunt for the vaccine,
right?
And to new therapeutics. And we're going to need that stuff. But we're not spending nearly as much time or energy as we need to on all the knowledge we need to change our behavior. So we need testing so we know where the virus is. We need to know how the virus spreads between us so we understand the transmission dynamics so we can change our behavior. You know, maybe some of the things we're doing to protect ourselves are overkill and we don't need to do them, you know, but we just don't know enough.
Right.
We don't know who's infected and we don't know how you actually do get infected. So we just have to have these very crude measures of just stay home, assume everyone else is infected, assume any kind of exposure is going to make you sick. And that's just, it's a very crude way to go about living with this virus. You know, we could do much better, but as a society, we have to prioritize that. We have to say, look, let's do our moonshot to figure out how does this thing spread?
Right. And it seems, and I guess it makes sense. I can't criticize the scientists for saying one thing at the beginning, and then as they get more information and learn more about it, they change what their advice is, because as we've all learned by now, this is a novel coronavirus. Can you explain what that means?
The novel part of
the novel and the coronavirus, because people are going, it's coronavirus, it's a common cold, and it's not the common cold.
Right. So coronaviruses are a family of viruses, and there's a whole bunch of them. Some of them do cause mild cases of cold. So we've had them around for a while. But then there's some of them like this one, or the one that we had in 2003, that are much more deadly. You know, they transmit really well, but they're pretty deadly. There's a lot of pathogens that are more deadly than this one, but they're not as transmissible. Oh. So a pathogen has to balance these two things. How deadly can I be versus how catchy, how contagious can I be? You know, if you're too deadly, you're not going to be able to spread from one person to the next, because that person's going to be sick and dead, not going to be coughing on everyone on the bus on the way to work. You know, so that's not always a winning strategy. So you want to be able to spread really quickly and really easily. But of course, the way viruses replicate, you know, how they build up their numbers is by replicating inside your body. And that's usually what causes disease and sickness. So, this thing is sort of the current that's found the sweet spot between really easy to spread and just a little bit more deadly than the seasonal influenza, which adds up to a huge burden because so many people are going to be able to get this thing. It spreads so effectively and efficiently.
Right. And now, I mean, we were told to be prepared for a second wave, as it were, in the fall when flu season traditionally begins. But the first wave never ended, mostly because people, I think it's because it opened up too soon and people said, okay, we can go back to normal now. Well, you can't go back to normal. And I'm sitting in Florida, which they're now saying, you know, is the epicenter of it all. But hey, it's not unique to here. From Arizona to California to Utah today had a record number of deaths. So, what in your, you know, expertise, what do you think is going to happen in the fall when we butt up against flu season and we're not done with this first wave yet?
I mean, what we've been doing throughout pretty much is reacting. So we're sort of waiting until the thing gets kind of bad. And then once it becomes sort of a bonfire, then we say, oh, wait a second, let's try to throw some, you know, blankets on this fire that we ignored until it was huge. So, you know, I think we're going to be continuing to play catch up until we get better governance in place, which hopefully will happen with the next election. But until then, I don't, you know, we will progress. We will keep reopening. We will create those super spreading and other transmission opportunities for this pathogen. And then when we get the inevitable outbreaks and, you know, spikes and our ICUs are saturated,
yep,
then we're going to have to shut down again. So it's sort of the worst of both worlds. You know, we're not, instead of doing sort of soft shutdowns where, you know, we can mask up, we can do social distancing, we can do these mitigation effects while the virus is at a low level, and maybe we can keep going with that. Instead, we're just opening everything up And then the virus gets to a big level. And of course, it grows exponentially. And our response is linear. So, you know, we just are never really getting ahead of it, which is what you need to do with any pathogen, because they, as I said, they grow exponentially.
We're speaking with Sonia Shaw. She's the author of, I believe, 5 books now, a couple of them on diseases spreading around the globe, from pandemic, tracking contagions from cholera to Ebola and beyond. You also wrote a book called The Fever, which is about, you said, how malaria has ruled humankind for 500,000 years. So some of these diseases, they're there and we never get rid of them. We've had some luck, I guess, with smallpox and polio, but even they can come back if we don't stay on top of it. This is, again, this came out of nowhere. How does a disease just get born like that? It just happens in nature?
Well, yes and no. I mean, we know that we've had hundreds of these pathogens either newly emerge or reemerge into new places since around 1940. About 60% of them originate in the bodies of animals, about 70% in the bodies of wild animals. Well, these, it's not because animals are particularly, you know, infested with contagious diseases. These microbes don't cause them any harm. So these are just microbes that live in their body the way we have microbes that live in our guts and et cetera in our body and don't make us sick. But because we are destroying so much wildlife habitat, you know, we're losing a lot of wild species. Of course, we have 150 species that are lost to extinction every day. But the species that remain, they have to crowd into little tinier and tinier fragments of habitat that we leave behind for them. And those fragments are more frequently in close contact to where we live. So if you cut down the trees where the bats live, they don't just disappear. They come and live in your backyard and roost in the trees and on your farms, et cetera, instead. And then when your kids go out and play near a tree where bats are roosting, they get a little bat poo on their hand and put their hand in their mouth. And the microbes that lived inside the bat body have now entered the human body. And a microbe is just like any other living thing. It finds like a new home, a new habitat to exploit, and it does it. It takes up that space and it adapts to the human body and turns into a human pathogen. And so that's the process that explains a lot of the pathogens of the past. It explains a lot of the new pathogens we're seeing today. And it's probably how we got the novel coronavirus as well.
Wow. And it changes the world like that. But that's how the world changes, too. Things happen and everything's different. Now, Sonia, you're a science journalist and an author. I remember back, it must have been January, I guess February probably, and I heard the words of this doctor who worked at the CDC, Dr. Nancy Messonnier, I think was her name. And it was a clip that played, and she was talking to her young children about how our lives were going to change because this thing was happening and we'll get through it. And I thought, wow, talk about, you know, scare tactics. And then we never heard from her again, because I guess Donald Trump doesn't like anyone sounding the alarm and warning us of what's to come. Now we see what he's done to Dr. Fauci. We see what he's done to the CDC. He withdrew from the World Health Organization. Now, I know they're not perfect, but we're in the middle of a global pandemic and the United States of America pulls out of the World Health Organization. What are your thoughts on all that?
Well, the good news is that the withdrawal from the WHO doesn't take effect until after the election.
Right.
So this is like the Paris Agreement. Yep. This is a gesture of, you know, screw you, we're going it alone and we don't like what you've been saying about how badly we're doing. So, you know, but the good news is that we can rectify that if we change, you know, if we have a good result in the next election. But I think, you know, this is a challenge for any administration, really. Like, a global pandemic is a huge challenge for any country. And this is a disease that is not very distinguishable. You know, it looks like pneumonia. It can look like a cold. It can look like allergies. So it's a very sneaky pathogen. It's going to be hard. And, you know, so we would need our very best governance in place to be able to have done a good job with this. And in fact, what we've had is the very worst governance. You know, when I was writing my book, Pandemic, it came out in 2016. And people have asked me since the coronavirus pandemic started, well, what's surprising? You know, is this what you thought it would look like? And it is, in almost every way, except the totally chaotic U.S. response. I don't think anyone predicted that the CDC would become an agency that you can't trust anymore. You know, I've been reporting on diseases for a long time, and the CDC was always the very, you know, it's the gold standard around the world, not just here,
right?
You know, around the world. And now it's like, I don't even trust their statistic that much anymore.
Well, you know? And now Trump, the administration saying for hospitals, don't send your data to the CDC, send it to the Health and Human Services. What?
Yeah. I mean, what is the reasoning behind that? There's so many ways, you know, and this really goes back, like this has a whole history. You know, Trump he's playing right into it. This is what, you know, despots have done, corrupt governments have done, trying to cover up epidemics and outbreaks. It goes way back, hundreds of years. I mean, you look at the cholera pandemics of the 18th century, the 19th century, they tried to cover those up too. In the city of New York, they didn't collect data. The Board of Health said, oh, there's no cholera here at all. Finally, the physicians were so angry because their patients were dying in their arms. They said, well, we're going to publish a bulletin that shows, you know, that all these people are in fact dying. The mayor was like, oh, it's just, you know, it's just regular diarrhea. It's nothing new, you know, because they didn't want to disrupt commerce. You know, it would be too expensive to close down the Erie Canal and the Hudson River, which is how the cholera was coming into the city over and over again. They didn't want to, you know, take that financial hit. So, you know, what we're seeing today is really a lot of echoes of what's happened in the past. However, we have a much better way forward. We didn't need to be here.
No, we didn't. And if we had leadership, you know, we might look more like Europe today and be getting back to normal and preparing for the second wave, because that is going to hit. It's just horrible. Sonia Shah, you're a wealth of information. I so appreciate your time here. I hope you'll come back as this progresses, because we're in this for the long haul. This is not going away anytime soon, is it?
No, it's not. We have a couple years at least.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Before you leave, before we end, I want to ask you, you have a new book out that was just released last month. What a time for a book. Not like you can go out and do a regular book tour, but it's called The Next Great Migration, The Beauty and Terror of Life on the Move. What is that about?
Well, it's about how climate change is scrambling all of our migration patterns. And what I argue in the book is that we sort of conflate migration with crisis. So when people are moving around, we say, oh, it's a migrant crisis. You know, oh, there's going to be lots of, you know, climate refugees. It's a crisis, a refugee crisis. And what I wanted to sort of interrogate in this book and argue is that migration alone is not the crisis. Migration is an adaptive response to a slow motion problem of our own making, for sure. But migration itself is not the crisis. And in many ways, migration can be the solution. So that's sort of what I try to argue in that book.
Interesting. Do you think the climate change has anything to do with the birth of this novel coronavirus?
I think habitat destruction is really the primary driver. I think that's true for the biodiversity crisis and for a lot of the new diseases we're seeing today is because of habitat destruction. But of course, habitat destruction and climate change are very intimately linked too, because of course it's fossil fuel development that destroys all that habitat.
That's right.
And that's what's fueling the climate crisis also.
Do you think we can emerge from this okay? I'm looking at the near future, and I'm afraid this is our future for a while. This is staying at home, wearing masks, social distancing. It's going to be a rough life for a while going forward, isn't it?
I don't know, Nicole. I mean, I think if we had governance, we could have good testing, right? Mm-hmm. So if we had really good testing, surveillance testing, screening testing, we would know who's been exposed and who has the infection. So those people, yes, they would have to be quarantined. They would have to be really careful. But other people could go about their business, and we could interact in a semi-normal fashion. If we really knew, it's a difference between, you know, knowing where the fire is burning and just smelling smoke everywhere. You know,
right.
If you just smell smoke everywhere, you just have to be scared. You might, you know, get caught into the fire and burst into flames at any moment. And that's how you have to live. That's how we're living right now, because we don't know who has the virus and who's been exposed, because we're not doing the testing. We're not doing the contact tracing. But if we did, then we would know, right? So then
right.
We'd have localized outbreaks, and we would know where it is, and everyone else could go about their business. So, you know, it's perfectly feasible, from what I can tell, that we can get to that place. It's what all the other countries that have controlled this are doing. It's not to say there won't be outbreaks. There will be outbreaks. Right? There will be flare-ups, but we'll know where they are. So we can we can function as a society.
So there's a light at the end of the tunnel, maybe starting January 21st, 2021. All right. Well, I'll have to hold on to that. Sonia Shaw, thank you so much. Everyone, read her piece. It's the cover story at thenation.com. And her books, go to soniashaw.com. Follow her on Twitter at Sonia Shaw. I'll put links to all of it on my blog at NicoleSandler.com, where I post the show today. Thank you so much. It was great meeting you. I really appreciate it.
Nice talking to you.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye. And with that, we're done. Another day. We made it through. Go figure. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. We'll talk about the elections and more. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you tomorrow.